What's up, y'all? So today's episode is definitely a reminder that faith over fear always conquers. I had the pleasure of chatting it up with Trade Street Jam's founder, Ashley Rouse. She was recently featured on Viceland's Hustle. She has a beautiful story and a beautiful spirit, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear from her today. Let's hop into today's episode. You are now listening to The Reminder Remedy, and I'm your host, Alina Conley, reminding you that everything you need is everything you got. This podcast was created with you in mind, those of you that want to live the most authentic versions of yourself. I'm located here in Atlanta, Georgia, my hometown, with my husband, Prince, and my three kiddos, Parker, Alicia, and Creed. I love talking all things motherhood, business, especially entrepreneurship, self-care, and all things in between. Let's get into today's episode. All right, guys. So welcome back to another episode of The Reminder Remedy. I am pumped about today's episode. I have to go ahead and give a quick shout out to my bestie Chloe and her future husband Jose, because they were down here a few weeks ago and I was getting them, telling them how I was super excited to be bringing on some super dope women on the podcast for the month of March, which of course is Women's Month. And so our guest today came highly recommended, so you guys are going to have a chance to hear from Ashley Rouse of Trade Street Jam. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So when I first kind of got introduced to you, of course, the first thing that Jose was talking about was your episode on Hustle, which is featured on Viceland. And he was like, she was on Viceland. And they were like, you know, showing all of this stuff about how she built her business. And so I love just Vice in general. Like, I think it's a super dope platform. So of course I went and watched the episode. And so, you know, congrats on that feature. That looked really fun.
Thank you. It was such a good time.
Yeah. One of the things that I saw on the episode that I thought was, just very authentic was they kind of showcase you as not just being really honest when you came to sharing how you were nervous about, you know, taking this thing all the way, right? It was kind of like you had your goal for, you know, I think you had already done like 25,000 or something. And you're like, yeah, my goal is 250. He was like, it needs to be higher than that. And you were like, well, you know, I don't know. This is where I am right now. And to me, like, just kind of you just being able to own, like, I'm a little afraid, and then really showing your transition into kind of that faith over fear. Can you just give us a little bit of your story going from, you know, how you got started, you know, how, you know, I guess skeptical were you of taking this thing and making it like a full-time gig? Because so many people have these ideas like you, and, you know, to be honest, that is the part. It's like the fear is a huge part of that transition. So can we hear a little bit about your journey?
Yeah. So I came up with the idea for Trade Street probably about 10 years ago. And I lived on Trade Street in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time. And, you know, I loved just kind of cooking and doing little fun, like DIY projects. And that's kind of how I came up with the jam concept. And at the time I was like, I should start a company, you know, and I should call it Trade Street Jam Company. And a friend of mine said, hey, write that down. So I wrote it down and kind of just tabled it, and forgot about it. And when we moved out to Brooklyn about 5 years ago, I really, really got inspired by, you know, everything out here, the culture, the food, the music. And I saw all these like craft fairs where people were selling these handmade goods. And I just really, you know, was feeling like I had missed doing a hobby, right? Like something on the side. I'm so used to coming home from work and then working on something else. I had a business before this company where I did custom alterations. So it was called Urban Mondays, and it was like people would send in their clothes, like send in jeans or a shirt, and we would distress it or turn the jeans into joggers and send them back. So I was always like doing something. I was always fulfilling orders and creating after work. And so when I moved out here and we stopped doing Urban Mondays, I really missed that. So I said, hey, let's try this again. So I started making jams. I started selling them through Facebook. So I would just, you know, put messages up that said, like, hey, guys, I have 10 jars of this really exclusive flavor. You know, message me if you want to get it. And that's really how it started. After I started picking up through that, I heard about Etsy. And I was like, maybe I'll start an Etsy store, make it kind of official. And that was really the beginning of Trade Street Jam. And that was in 2016.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's kind of
business model. We're at what, a little over two years, almost three.
Yeah. Yeah. Three years. And yeah, so that's really how it started. And I think it wasn't until late in year two, I believe. Well, let's say early year two that I kind of was like, you know, just throwing the idea, like, I would just love to do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more so, you know, kind of when you're just talking or dreaming out loud is what I call it. That's what I was doing. I don't know if at the time I really believed that I could do that, but I just knew it would be kind of a dream. And I knew from, I had started doing like little craft fairs and markets and farmers markets, and I had met a lot of people who were doing, you know, their business full time. And I just really was like, that would be a dream, you know, like I would love to do that. And my husband, who would hear me say this over and over, was so supportive from the beginning. You know, when I say something, he's like, all right, let's do it. And I think in my mind, I was like, well, wait, I didn't know if I really should do it. I was just saying it would be fun, you know, but he was very much so kind of pushing me like, you've been saying this, let's figure out how we can do it. So I think that's when, you know, around like year two and a half, that I was really kind of, the wheels were spinning in my head. And I was like, how can I make this work?
So when you kind of having that conversation with yourself, you know, did you then start digging into the numbers? Were you kind of leading with the marketing and maybe surveying your audience? Like, what were kind of some of those top three steps where you were like, okay, let me kind of solidify that this is a thing?
Well, to be honest with you, it wasn't until, it was much further after I first thought about it that I actually thought it was a reality. There was definitely a gap in between because, again, it was something that I dreamed of, but I had no idea where to start. You know, I've never done anything like that before. You know, I didn't know anyone close enough to me that could really give me like the ins and outs of what that looked like. And so there was this gap in between the time that we were like, okay, yeah, maybe you could do that one day, until the time I was like, oh, this could really, really happen. And I think in between that time was a lot of me doubting myself, really kind of just like second guessing myself about it. And it wasn't until I think when my husband really realized how much I was doubting myself that he said, hey, let's sit down and like put some numbers on paper. Mm-hmm. And when we did that, it totally helped me. Like, I don't think he realized how much anxiety I was getting just from the idea of like not having income. Mm-hmm. You know, he's such a calm person. And so I think for him, he was like, yeah, if we need to make this work, we'll make it work. He had no idea that I was like freaking out, you know, on the inside. So once he realized that, he sat down with me, we kind of put together a spreadsheet. And, you know, he just started backwards. He was like, you know, okay, this is how much jam you sell now per month. How much jam do you need to sell per month to make this amount of money? Or he would say, you know, how much money would you like to see come in from the jam? So let's say I said, oh, like $3,000 a month. And he would say, okay, he'd put that number down and he would say, okay, you do three markets per month. You sell this much online. And we kind of just like worked backwards. And I think, you know, he's a little bit more analytical than me, and he likes to see the numbers, but I didn't realize how much I needed to see that as well. So once I saw on paper, like, oh, I do three markets a month, I really only need to do six, and I can make the amount of money I was just talking about. So it really made it seem much more attainable at the time once we did that.
Right. So let's go backwards just a little bit, because I'm always so fascinated to know, like, when it comes to the actual craft that's being made, right? So whether it's jam or t-shirts or whatever, like, I'm always intrigued as to how that became, like, the product, because I know that you have a culinary background, and so there are probably a ton of different foods that you enjoy, but how did you say, I'm gonna do jams? Because when I think jams, I think of, like, a Southern Belle girl who's like, listen, when I'm entertaining people, they're gonna have, like, my biscuits and pear preserves. Like, are you a true Southern gal at heart?
I don't know. I don't know, but keep in mind, I am a true culinarian at heart. So when it comes to being, like, the epitome of a foodie, like, it's kind of like, it's just such a creative space that you can really connect to a lot of different things, no matter where you're from or, you know, how you grew up. So, like, me personally, I didn't grow up eating jam a whole lot. You know, I didn't grow up with my mom making jam or anything like that. But when you are kind of opened up to the culinary world, you start seeing things differently. You try different things at restaurants, you experiment with things at home. And so I think for me, I really liked the idea of being able to preserve these flavors of the season. And that's kind of what like the basis of like canning is. When you can, like, when you preserve something in a jar, you're basically preserving something for the current season that you're in, and that it's meant to be that you can have it later on. Right. So if I make, you know, peach preserves or whatever in the summertime, or cherry preserves in the summer, it's something that I can enjoy in December when peaches or cherries aren't really prevalent.
Right.
And so I really liked the idea of, like, preserving something for another season. It was really fun to me. I liked the idea of doing it and giving it away as, like, gifts for holidays and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it was just something that kind of spoke to me. I don't know if it was so much that I'm, like, Southern or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Chicago. But I did live in North Carolina for about 8 years. So there's a piece of me that's Southern, but I don't necessarily think that's where the jam thing came from.
Okay. That was just wishful thinking on my end. Like, okay. That's so, it's so funny to me that you, well, not funny, but I think that it is almost, it's interesting that we're connecting now, because I actually used to live on Trade Street in Brooklyn. And so when I was reading that in your story, I was like, that's so bizarre. Like, literally, you know, I did a stint in Charlotte for an internship, and I lived on Trade Street, and a ton of the students who lived in, like, the student housing that I was in, they were all in culinary school, because isn't there one, like, right down there?
Yeah, that's Johnson and Wales. That's the school I went to.
Okay. See, we're like kind of sisters in passing.
Right.
that we're here now. So, okay. So you got the jam going. And one of the things that I admire about your brand is, in my opinion, you have created almost like this lifestyle marketing around the senses and experience. And, you know, I don't know if this was intentional or if this is just what I gathered when I, like, look at your branding and when I'm, like, mouth watering over your Instagram pictures. But I know that when you first started kind of sharing your jams, you know, you have, like, these dinner parties and you're putting them in cocktails, you're putting them over food, you're putting them over chicken. And so, you know, when people think about a product, sometimes they're just like, oh, I'm going to create this product, but then they don't really go beyond just, okay, these are product shots, this is what it looks like in the jar, to create that almost experience that connects with the actual senses for the consumer. But I feel like your brand really does that, because when I look at it, I start to see myself, you know, not thinking of just jam going on toast, but like, oh yeah, I could have this with, you know, a Greek parfait. I could put this over, you know, some glazed chicken from the smoker. Like, it becomes almost like a trendy lifestyle thing. So how much of that, you know, has been a part of your marketing, or was that intentional at all?
I mean, that was definitely intentional. And I would say that is the majority of everything that we focus on when it comes to our marketing. I think we learned early on. So in the first couple of years when we were out and we were, like, selling and we were at these fairs and markets, it was us really understanding our demographic, developing our demographic, because it was very different than what I initially thought or wanted the demographic to be.
Oh, wow.
So starting off, we were our first few fairs that we did were in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. And the area was just so cool. It was so trendy. A lot of like young hipster people. And that's kind of what we, my husband and myself, considered ourselves, you know, like young hipsters, like dressing cool and hanging out. So that to me, I was like, that's my demographic, young, cool people like us. Right. And I think it took us a while, you know, I'd say a year of us really selling at these markets to understand like, hey, that's who you want your demographic to be, but that's not who's buying your jam.
Right.
And
right.
So once we really realized that and kind of wrapped our minds around that, it really helped us better target who we were selling jam to. Mm-hmm. And then along that kind of exploration, we also learned that a lot of what we needed to do needed to be about educating the customer. Because a lot of people, I would say pretty much everyone, they look at jam and they're like, okay, jam on toast, but what else would I do with it?
Right.
And we really started noticing that, you know, people would come up to us, they'd be foodies, they'd say like, oh, this looks good, but like, I don't really eat toast, or I don't really eat breakfast. And instead of us losing them, it was so important for us to say, well, breakfast, I don't eat breakfast either, but I do eat chicken and I do make cocktails and I do this. And we noticed that once we would list a few things, you know, we would see a spark in their eye, like we would hit on something, right? I'd say cocktails, and they would go, cocktails? Oh, we have parties every weekend and we make craft cocktails. What do you mean cocktails?
Mm.
And next thing you know, I would kind of go down that route and then they would buy like 3 jars.
Wow.
And so we really, really were like, wow, we really have to spend a lot of our time educating the customer because they don't know the endless possibilities they can do with this. And we can't expect them to know that without us telling them, because that's what our brand is about. So early on, we decided like for the social that it would just be so important for us to make food and show it. You know, I'm a chef. I love cooking. So it was really about making these dishes at home for us to eat, but then taking pictures of them and really showing people, hey, we use this strawberry jam on this, and getting people excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to definitely say that you've done a awesome job of that. And I love the backstory as to how you saw like, okay, this is how we're going to educate our consumer. Because when I first heard it and I was like, jam, I was like, first of all, I don't even eat sugar. Like I live a keto lifestyle. And so in my mind, I was like, I don't know if I can like promote this product because like, you know, people need to cut out on the sugar anyway. And then when I started to really look at the brand, I saw that you didn't have added sugars and that you actually care about, you know, especially within the Black community, making sure that there was an alternative in your ingredients that, you know, weren't going to spike insulin levels. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that when people are creating products, you know, it's rare that we'll see, especially food products, that really focus on, and I'll say specifically in African-American food products, that really focus on health concerns. So can you share how that played a role?
Well, I think for me, you know, being around the Black community, I really understand how much health is an issue, right? Like, not only do I think it's like 13% of African Americans have diabetes, which is just like so high and so kind of ridiculous, right? Because it's like, how does this one culture have this disease more so than other cultures? And I really know that it's from food. I know that it stems from how we grew up. Like, you know, when I was growing up, health wasn't such a concern. And I mean, that sounds crazy, right? Because health is always an issue. But growing up, we didn't, like, my mom wasn't like, make sure we eat healthy. Like, we ate what we ate.
Right.
And it wasn't until I got older that, you know, weight started becoming a factor. And, like, that's something you look at. And, like, now closer in this era where it's like, oh, there's keto, there's this, there's all these, like, dieting, and there's all these things you can do to kind of monitor what you're putting in your body. But growing up, it wasn't so much like that. So I had to kind of rewire my brain. And that's something I did over years. And especially being in culinary, it helped me because I kind of opened my eyes to all these other alternatives to certain things that I was eating before. But then when I started this brand, it was like, you know, I love jam, but like some jam that I have is so, so sweet. You know, like if you open some jars with like Smucker's, you can turn it upside down and nothing will come out. because it's like so like thick and gelatinized, and a lot of that comes from sugar. Okay, like that's what gets that thickening. And if you open ours, you'll notice that it's a lot thinner than most jam. But we try to tell our customers, like, you know, that's a good thing. Like, that's a really good thing. There's no preservatives. There's no pectin in there. There's very little sugar added. And so it's a different product. And again, rewiring their mind to understand, like, why does it taste different? Why does it look different from what I grew up from? But once I, you know, explain that to them, they're like, oh, less sugar. And it's just so important for me to introduce a product to humanity, and especially for my own culture, that's not bad for them. You know, like something that's guilt-free. Mm-hmm. You know, I've struggled with weight for years and years. And honestly, I don't know a woman who hasn't. Right. I don't think I know a woman who hasn't or who doesn't. So it's important to, you know, for me to be able to eat something and not be so, you know, concerned, like, okay, I'm going to have just one of these. Oh, shoot, I want two. Okay, no more than two. Like, you don't have to do that with our jam. You know, if you add it to a drink, even if you add it to like a non-alcoholic drink into some sparkling water or, you know, whatever you're putting on, if you make a salad dressing with it, you don't have to worry about kind of overindulging. Mm-hmm. Just because it has a much cleaner basis than mostly anything you'll find on the shelf. And for us, that's like of number one importance.
Right. So, you know, when I think about your target demographic and kind of it's like so many messages behind this jar jam, right? Because for me, one of the things that I connected with when I was reading some of your previous interviews was how you talked about just like cooking as almost like being therapeutic. And I think that kind of talking about the Black community, and you'll find on this podcast and every episode, we always end up talking about Black folks because that's just like what we do, right?
Yeah. But yeah.
One of the things that in our culture, like cooking is more than just preparing a meal. Like, it is so therapeutic. It's been therapeutic, but it also, you know, it binds relationships. It creates, you know, almost like these rituals or celebrations. So it's just this staple thing in our community. But I know for me, I actually didn't grow up cooking. Like, my mom always cooked, and this is like the complete opposite from Clubby because she grew up cooking. And so when we got to Florida A&M, you know, you have half of the kids that like grew up in the kitchen and half of them that ain't never cooked before. So now I'm kind of like just experiencing this whole therapeutic cooking. It's like my outlet, right? And I don't get to do it as much. It used to bother me in the sense of I didn't feel like I was good at it. You know, I was like having to read recipes and find stuff, then go to the grocery store, spend an hour because I don't know which aisles is which. But it's like now as I've started to embrace, okay, as an adult, as a homemaker, you know, I can't go out to eat every day anymore. I can't, you know, just give my kids fast food. So how can I bring this experience into my life and make it where I get excited about it? You know, how can I create new dishes that, you know, maybe it is chicken two or three times a week, but adding something like a jam is going to make the experience or the flavor completely different. Can you just kind of talk about from your experience, how do those of us who want to kind of bring that lifestyle of cooking new dishes, you know, not just having the same thing every day, but doing it in a way that doesn't feel overbearing. Like, how do you kind of map out your weekly meals, et cetera?
So for us, it's really important too, to just kind of show the ease of the use of the product. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something too, that I had to kind of learn over time. Because as a chef, like, you know, I'm not always cooking these like fancy meals.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll cook things that I guess, let's say the average home cook may say is like a little bit more tough to cook, or, you know, the recipe is a little bit harder to follow. But for me, I've been doing this forever, so I didn't really realize that. So mm-hmm. that was one thing that I kind of came across was like, and my husband helped me with this. He was like, make sure that you're showing things that are easy to cook, right? So that everybody, you're really targeting everyone. So everyone, whether you've cooked your whole lives or like you're just kind of coming into it, that you really feel comfortable with doing it. So that kind of helped me retarget a little bit in the sense that I was like, let me keep it short and simple. So I started showing these dishes that were really easy to cook. You know, we did a dish the other day where we just made a one sheet pan meal. We took one sheet pan, we put three fillets of salmon on there. We cut some potatoes and Brussels and then a few slices of lemon and put it on the pan. And then we took our blueberry jam and just put like a tablespoon right on top of each salmon fillet, little salt and pepper. That's it. Put the whole thing in the oven and roasted it for maybe 20 minutes. And it was delicious. I don't even really like salmon. And it was so, so good. And my husband loved it. And so, you know, really showing people, like, this is a one sheet pan meal, takes 20 minutes to do on a weeknight. But then also our jam is a sauce. It's a condiment, right? So add this for a little bit of extra flavor. And I found that it just kind of like, kind of just excites you a little bit because it's like, yeah, I've had salmon before and potatoes, but like now I'm adding blueberry jam. And I really found that it was exciting. And so that's just something that we're really trying to do is just bring this excitement to cooking, but at the same time, ease. And there's a lot of products out there that do that. You know, like a lot of brands, like if you go into a cooking store, like Sur La Table or in Sonoma, they'll have these like bottled sauces and things, right? Like braising sauces and soup starters and all these things. And I think early on as a chef, I was like, why would they make this? Like, who would use this? But as I've gotten older and, you know, dinner is something now where it's like, yeah, it's fun, but sometimes it needs to be quick.
Right.
Or sometimes it needs to be easy. It's really nice to have a product that can kind of aid you in cooking, right? So like, you know, when I make risotto, I don't make it from scratch. I use box risotto, but I also will add like a little white wine and a little like mushrooms to it and really kind of zhuzh it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I love the idea of being able to like make something easy, but still make it really seem a little fancy. And I think that our jams really can do that. It can make it fun, but it doesn't have to be like stressful in any way.
Right. I love that. You're getting me like super hungry over here. I'm like, oh yeah, that salmon sounds great.
It was so good. It really was.
So what flavors do you guys offer?
So our best seller is our strawberry chipotle and fig. It's a little bit spicy. It's kind of like a strawberry jam and a fig jam mixed together, but then it has a little spicy kick to it. And then our second bestseller is our smoked peach, which is basically like summer grilling in a jar. It's super bright and peachy, but then it's got like this smokiness to it, which is really unique from most things that you'll find on the shelf. And then my favorite is our plum and rose, which is light and floral. And then we also have a blueberry lemon basil and a Chinese five spice apple butter. So those are our core five flavors. And then throughout the year, we will introduce other seasonal flavors. So the winter just kind of finishing up and we had a cranberry raspberry jam that was really, really good, really tart, really bright flavor, good for like the holidays and for putting on like turkey and chicken and sandwiches. It was great. And then the summer's coming up now, so we will reintroduce our spicy vanilla kiwi, which is also a fan favorite.
Spicy vanilla kiwi. Wow. So who comes up with the is it you or do you do like surveys from your clients on like flavors? Like how do you come up with the flavors?
So these flavors have been around for a little bit now, but early on, I literally just had like a test kitchen. I have like a list in my phone of probably 200 jams. And I come up with these ideas. I just think of it. Sometimes I dream about it and then I make it. And if it sounds good or tastes good, then I bring it to market. And so I think these flavors that we have now are five kind of core flavors that we tested in market over and over again. And people just really kind of resonated with these. So early on, we were kind of like switching our flavors very, very often, and it just got to be a lot to keep up with. So we kind of came up with these core flavors, but people love these.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. After this quick break from our sponsors, Ashley is going to go into detail on how she grew her business and my favorite part of the interview when we talk jam and Jesus. You do not want to miss this, guys.
Hey,
Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Well, I know for me, it was the easiest thing to rip off the band-aid of procrastination to start getting my message out there. And if you haven't heard about Anchor already, which I'm sure many of you have if you're listening to my show, it is the free tool that makes podcasting for anyone super easy. Like I said, it's free. There are tons of creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. This was a game changer for me because I absolutely had no excuse not to get it done. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so that you can be heard on Spotify, Apple, and many more. What I love about it is that you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. This is a game changer for us beginning podcasters to actually start driving some revenue from putting our message out there. It's really everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
You know?
Right. So on the back end side, I know that you originally said you were thinking about doing kind of like an Etsy store. Did you do that initially, or do you like keep your stuff at the house? Like we have probably a few listeners who are right at that place of like, okay, how am I going to distribute my product? Like, what did that process look like in terms of figuring out how to get it from, you know, kitchen to actually fulfilling inventory and getting it out there?
So I definitely started with the Etsy store. Etsy is such a great way to start off. And I mean, not even start. There's a lot of people on Etsy who that's their main base. You can be very successful on Etsy. And I think what I loved about Etsy is that I kind of wasn't ready to sit down and build a website. I didn't really know what I wanted that to look like yet, what functionalities I wanted it to have. And, you know, shipping's always a concern. Like, you know, when you have your own website, you decide your shipping costs, you decide all these things. And I think I was just ready to sell jam. And I loved that Etsy did a lot of the legwork for you. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely recommend Etsy to anybody starting off. So we started the Etsy store, kind of like your own website without your own website. They, you know, help you build a page. You can kind of decorate it the way you want it to look. But then they also help you with the shipping. They recommend, you know, what box to use, what shipping costs that will fit best for your product. So it just really worked out. And then also Etsy will kind of market for you, right? Like Etsy is a thing. So people go to Etsy and just look around for handmade goods. It has a really good reputation. So I just loved that. So it's definitely a good way to start. And then I think eventually we moved away from that, because, you know, my husband's in marketing and he was very much about it was time to promote my own brand versus before I was promoting another brand. I was promoting Etsy. Mm. So, you know, getting people to, and you can lose customers sometimes. You know, you say, oh, go to my Etsy store, and you go to the Etsy store and then you scroll down and it says other products like this. And next thing you know, you've clicked on one. And then you've clicked on them and now you're like five pages away from my page.
Right.
Because you just got caught up. And especially if you're like me and you're very like into DIY and, you know, it's easy to get caught up. But when they're on your own website, they can only get caught up in what you have on there. So, you know, he was like, it's time to start promoting your own thing. So eventually I built my own website and there's a lot of tools to do that as well, which make it super easy. We love Squarespace. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, there's WordPress and Shopify and all these other things. So, then we eventually built the site and started doing that. And then there's a ton of other e-com places now that can help you sell as well. There's Goldbelly, which is like, they sell, a lot of like handmade gifts and mouth.com, which is like, there's artisan small batch craft items up there as well. So there's a lot of different ways to do it if you're getting started.
Right. So did you move away from Etsy after you had quit your job, or was that how was that fit into your timeline?
Oh no, that happened way before. I think I was only on Etsy for maybe a year max, maybe a little less than that.
So did you have all your product like from your house? Like, what was that like when you were still working? Did you have like set hours? Like, okay, I'm going to work during the day. Then I come home and I fulfill orders. Like, kind of what was the behind the scene on that?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. I was at work all day. When I came home, I would fulfill any orders that came in. What's that?
I said, have y'all scaled that process at all, or is it kind of still in that logistic phase?
We have scaled, but it still kind of works the same. So, I mean, we're making more now. We do have like our own like little storage facility. So we store jam there. We store some jam in our apartment. We store some jam at the manufacturer. But I still do all of the fulfilling myself. The only thing that's changed is really the growth and how much. It takes a lot more of my time now, but now that I'm full time, you know, it's much easier. But I see the growth and I see what's coming. And so I've been doing a lot of research about having my manufacturer fulfill for me. And so that'll be the next step where I go to the actual co-packing facility. They make the product for me. And rather than me taking it from them, I leave it there. They store it for me. And then when I get an order, they'll go ahead and fulfill it straight out of the facility.
Right. Now, did you always have a manufacturer, or were you ever like whipping up batches from your kitchen, or what was that process like?
I was always whipping up batches in my kitchen until like 6 months ago.
Were you nervous to like transition your, because I know some people are like, oh, it's going to lose the quality, or I don't trust people with my recipes. Like, what was that?
Well, we had a bit of a transition phase. So I made it out of my kitchen initially. And then it got to the point where I just wanted it to be a little bit more like legit, you know, on paper. I think there's certain laws about how much you can produce in your kitchen. And then some laws about selling online when you produce in your kitchen. So we decided to move to an incubator space. So it's basically like these shared kitchens, and you'll go in there and there'll be a bunch of different companies producing their product in there. So you basically rent out the kitchen. So that was the next step for us. So we went from our kitchen to renting out a kitchen space, and we'd go in there once or twice a month. And my husband would always help. And then I would really just get any friends that I could to come help, and we would make the jam there. So when we were at home, I was probably making about 40 jars at a time. That was about the most I could do at one time. Mm-hmm. When we moved to the shared kitchen, we were making about 150 jars at a time, and we would make two batches while we were there. So 300 jars in 1 8-hour shift.
Oh, wow.
So we were really able to scale to 300 from 40. So that was like a nice in-between kind of step for us. So it really allowed me the time to scale up my recipes. Not all recipes will scale up exactly. So, you know, if you're doubling the recipe, that's fine. If you're tripling the recipe, it might not be everything gets tripled, if that makes sense. So like we had a spicy jam, and the first time I did it, I think we, you know, did five times my original recipe, but the spiciness, the chipotle peppers, that didn't need to be five times, because it was very, very spicy. Does that make sense? So sometimes when you scale a recipe up, it's more than just, you know, multiplying it out and doing it. Sometimes it has to be adjusted. So that gave us time to really adjust the recipes and be able to kind of scale them up. And then the next step after that was when we decided to get the manufacturer. But I had been researching that for a while. So one thing that is really big over this way for us is preparing for success. It's something that, you know, my husband always says, and it's just something that we really live by. So I'm always preparing for something bigger, even if I don't know how I'm going to get it or when that's going to come. And it's really gotten me pretty far. I will say, I think God has really blessed me because I've been preparing. So even before I even thought about having a co-packer, I knew that that would be the next step where one day someone would make this jam for me. I didn't know how I was going to be able to afford that, or how that even worked, but I started doing the research on a few different manufacturing facilities, the cost, what really goes into it, and kind of visiting the places and seeing what they look like. And so I did all that work in advance. So when it was time to switch, I already had, you know, I already knew where I was going. And so that was really, really helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that that's great advice. It's just kind of like, it's almost like they say, show up for the position that you want, right? When you're in the work, kind of the same thing in the entrepreneurial space. It's like, you got to have that bigger vision so that the smaller things make sense, you know, and by the time you get there, you're like, oh yeah, I knew I was going to end up here because I was a catalyst for that vision, you know, way before it got here. Now I, throughout this interview, you have been mentioning your husband, very frequently. What's his name?
Don.
Don. So it sounds like you and Don are quite the husband wife duo. What is that like? You know, we have a lot of newly married couples that actually listen to the podcast together, always looking for entrepreneurial advice, relationship advice. And we know that sometimes businesses, especially entrepreneurial companies, can, you know, either make or break a relationship. You know, one person is working way too much, the other person doesn't contribute, or, you know, the other person can't see the vision. But it seems like you guys kind of have a setup that's working well. How have you all established it, and kind of how do y'all work the business together?
Well, for us, I think one, we have a really good foundation. So we've been together for about 11 years now. So we have spent a lot of time building the foundation of our relationship. Mm-hmm. And we still do that. And so we know what's most important for us. We know kind of what we have to do to make this relationship good, right? Even if it's not what we personally want to do, but to make the other person happy. So there's a lot of things that we understand and have been through that kind of have given us this really good foundation. And the business came second, you know, it came after that. So there would be no, like, the business would make or break this. Right. Never. That's second. Our relationship is number one. And, you know, this is something that came from God, our relationship. So we've been through a lot, but we've always been very, very close. And it's very relevant that this came from God. So there's no way we would allow something else to come outside and kind of break it. And because we know that, we're able to kind of put limits on the business. And, you know, there's limitations. There's days where I will try so hard not to bring up Jam. Because he hears about Jam every single day, and he needs a break sometime, you know? And honestly, we put God first in our relationship, and that's the best advice I can give anybody, is to just put God first, because there's things that, and I've talked about this before, on other interviews and things, but there's just things that I think you will get caught up in, or you could get caught up in, but when you put God first, it kind of just hones it all in. It kind of just keeps you in line, right? So there's times where I've wanted to do things, or he's wanted to do things. It could be anything. It could be like, you know, he's been transparent with me and said there's days where he's wanted to come home and he's like, I hope she doesn't even mention Jam tonight. I can't even deal, right? That's what he's thinking in his head. But then God will kind of come in and say, hey, that's your wife. If she needs your help or she needs your advice, you're going to give it to her because that's what you're there for. Right. And it kind of totally will be like, oh my God, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry. You're right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was being selfish. Like, if she needs that, then let me give that to her. And so that kind of, it just really has molded him into this great person and great husband, because he's aware of that, right? He's aware when he doesn't think something that may be the best for us, right? He's very aware that, like, all right, that's not the way I should do things. And same for me. So by putting kind of God in our relationship, it really allows us to kind of do the right thing, right? That's the best way to say it. It allows us to do the right thing. Yeah. But overall,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, overall though, my husband is amazing. He's the best person I know. And he's so patient. He's so calm. He's a great listener. He's willing to help whenever I need. He's done so many markets with me, like 8-hour, 10-hour days, just selling Jam with me when he'd much rather be at home doing whatever. So he's always just kind of been a person that's by my side. And, you know, like when I was going to quit, he's like, yep, we got it. Whatever you need, we'll make it work. Mm-hmm. When I've had big growth and I've been afraid, you know, he's like, well, that doesn't come from God. So why are you afraid? He put this here for you. And really just keeping me in line and keeping me where I need to be. And he, over the years, has helped me strengthen my faith, mm-hmm. Which has only brought us together closer and brought me closer to God. So overall, he's amazing.
I love that you are not afraid to be candid about how much of that spiritual walk plays a part in everything, right? Like, I think a lot of times when I do, some business coaching, people try to separate the two. It's like, oh, well, I kind of compartmentalize my spiritual life and my business and my marriage and my this and that. And my advice to them is, for me personally, you know, it wasn't until I really knew that everything that I do, whether it's business, relationships, you know, motherhood, parenthood, even just everyday conversations, the person that I am is, you know, that God created image. So whether I'm walking into a boardroom or a classroom or just having a conversation, that version of me is always going to show up, because there's no separation of spirit and success, in my opinion. And it sounds like, you know, all the way that you approach life and your marriage and your business is being led by him, which I think a lot of people sometimes don't know how to express that without feeling like, oh, well, I don't want to step on toes in the business world talking about my spirituality or my faith. And I know that for you, you've even mentioned, spending a year strengthening that relationship so that you can, you know, be confident in all of the things that, you know, you haven't even faced yet. Can you talk a little bit about how you got to this place? You know, some people grow up in the church. Some people, you know, say, oh, I have a girlfriend. She grew up Catholic and she was like, she decided to get baptized again because she never really felt like, you know, she had that relationship or that spiritual connection to understand what was expected of her or who she was called to be. So can you talk a little bit about that year-long journey that I've heard you mention in other episodes and how that played a role for you as an individual?
Well, similar to your girlfriend, I grew up Catholic. I've always, you know, we went to Mass every Sunday. So we've always been involved in the church. I've always prayed. Mm-hmm. But I think it wasn't until I really, growing up, I would have like family members who were Baptist. They would take me to Baptist church. And I just remember being like, why is this so long? Like, mm-hmm. Catholic Mass is 30 minutes. Like, why are we here for 5 hours? And I just remember just dreading it and just being like, I would hate going to visit friends or spend the night, and I knew that we were going to have to go to church and be there for all day, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I was always faithful. We always prayed, but the way I can best explain it is, back then we prayed when you needed something or when you were going through something, right? So that was really the main time that I talked to God, was like, hey God, like, my grandma's sick, can you heal her? You know, or hey God, like, I got this big test and I need help. Can you help me get through it and help me get a good grade on this test, right? But I never talked to him just to talk to him. I never just had a conversation with him. I never prayed just to pray. I never woke up in the morning really and said, thank you for, you know, this favor you have put in my life for no reason. Thank you. It was more so we had a relationship based on when someone was sick or when we needed something. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but it's almost, that's just how I grew up, you know? And so I was faithful and I loved God and I believed in God and I knew he could work miracles. But until I met my husband, I didn't realize what it looked like to put him in everyday aspects of your life, right? Not just when it was convenient, but every day. And so I remember him at one point talking about his purpose and how he felt like his purpose was this, you know, he has this thing where he wants to help a million people and, or touch the lives of a million people. And he was like, that's his purpose. And it was all this about purpose. Right. And I hadn't really heard that before. And I was like, well, why don't I have a purpose? And he's like, what? You do have a purpose. Right. And I'm like, well, why hasn't he told me yet? Like, you over here talking to him, y'all having conversations. Why hasn't he told me? And he's like, well, have you been listening? Have you asked him? Well, no, I haven't asked him. What do you mean, asked him, right? And so over the years, I was like, I really had this epiphany where it was like, oh, like, there's a whole other realm to what a relationship with God looks like. And so I've learned that from my husband over years. And so I started doing things that I had never done before. I started reading devotionals every day, right? Like getting the Bible app and reading different scriptures and devotionals daily to kind of keep God in my life daily and not just sometimes or when I needed him. I started having conversations with him. I started asking him for things. I think I never realized that you should ask God for things. You should tell him what you need. Mm-hmm. So that he can provide it, right? You have to tell him. So it was such a transformation over the past few years for me, really strengthening my faith. And like I said, it wasn't hard. I found it fun. I still do think it's really fun because it's almost like, I was telling someone, it's almost like when you're in a new relationship and it feels so good and you're so excited and you're like, oh my God, I'm talking to this boy and he's great. And like, I just love spending time with him. And it's so exciting. Like, I feel like I'm in that phase because it was like, and it's almost like, let's say the boy was someone you went to middle school with, you know him and y'all were friends, but now you guys are on an intimate level, right? On this other level of your relationship. And that's how it feels. It feels like I've always known God and he's always been there for me. But now it's really opening my eyes to other aspects. And I remember hearing about this other podcast called like Kingdom Driven Entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And it was about putting God into your business. And I listened to like one or two of them and I had no idea that God should be in your business. Mm-hmm. I literally didn't even know, right? This is part of me learning still. And I was like, wait, God in business? Like that's a thing?
Yeah.
So I started like listen, and I started looking it up, and then I was on this devotional app, and I was like, well, let me put like business or entrepreneur, all these like weekly devotionals about it, and I'm like, wait, this is a thing, and I'm like, I felt like it was so. I mean, I feel like a child like learning something for the first time, but it doesn't matter when you, I guess, get baptized or get saved or increase your relationship. It doesn't matter when. But it matters what you're putting into that. And so for me, I think when I really realized that God should be in your business, it totally changed everything for me because that's the area that I feel like I need the most Jesus in my life.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, right? Like he has blessed my relationship so much and he's always looking over my relationship. And so, you know, that's a great part of my life, right? Like, me and my mom have this amazing relationship. She's my best friend. She's my mentor. And he has blessed that relationship. My job, I've always had, you know, for a while, I've had a really great job, really paid well, really excelled in my job. They loved me. I'm like, man, he is really blessing my 9-to-5. Like he blesses all these areas, right? But the business was where I felt like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm.
Like, I don't know how to start a business. I don't know how to grow from my home to a co-packer. I don't know how to be a marketer. I don't know how to do every single thing in my business because I'm the only one that runs it. You know, and that's the area that gave me the most anxiety. And so when I realized that you could bring God into your business and that was a thing, it changed everything because now I read these scriptures about how, you know, Jesus and what he went through and I read these real-time stories of people who have put him into his business, into their business and prepared and been a good steward over what they do have so he can provide them with more, that it's really opened my eyes to all the things that I can really do in this business.
Yeah. Man, I'm over here like about to do a shout because it's just so, so beautiful when you can feel so free and so excited in the promises that were already given to you, you know, and to your point, so many us don't unlock that until, you know, we get to a point where we realize that we have God-sized dreams that we're really not going to be able to do without him, right? And I think that
right.
your point, now that you have this business where there's so many unknowns and so much of it is going to be just like straight walking on faith, this is the only time that, you know, you've probably been in a position where you absolutely have no choice but to call on him. And I think that that's why you hear so many entrepreneurs start to, you know, talk about their faith, because it becomes an essential, you know, an essential business tool, if not the only thing that matters day to day. So I'm excited that you are confident enough to, you know, go out here and kind of spread the good news around, like, listen, you know, this is not just for, you know, praying when we need somebody healed, but like living the day to day, you know, calling and asking and knocking and receiving is going to really just change the game for so many people that have been kind of separating the two. So thank you for, you know, being vulnerable in that moment. So on the Reminder Remedy, I have like a tagline. I say, you know, everything you need is everything you got. And that really stemmed from a conversation that I actually had with God back in 2013. And this was when I had first left my 9-to-5. I lived in Brooklyn as well. But I worked on Wall Street for several years, and then I just kind of decided to go and pursue entrepreneurship. But back in 2013, I was sitting in my car, and you know, I was just feeling like, in order for me to be the person that I was supposed to be, right, walk in my purpose, like, I just needed all of these other things. I needed the perfect website. I needed the perfect blog. I needed to have a certain amount of money in the bank to go and, like, feel confident in meetings. Like, I had convinced myself that I needed so much more than what I currently had. And so, you know, I spent a year, like, spending all this money on, like, courses and trainings and books and, you know, secret guide to success, only to find myself in 2014, you know, really having not gone any place, because I was almost like paralyzed by this idea of I needed all of these tangible things. And so as I sat in my car, God just really said, I want to remind you that every single thing that you need to be the person that I created you to be, you already have. Like, you already possessed it. You possessed it before you were even created in your mother's womb. And so this podcast, really, we try to highlight how much of that is, you know, already kind of in you, and different things that we can do to remind ourselves of that. So if you had to think about, you know, ways that you remind yourself that, you know, you are enough, you know, that you possess these greater gifts, like, what are some things that you're doing daily to kind of keep your mind in an alignment? I know that you said you do the Bible app, but do you have any other kind of daily habits that you feel like have, you know, kind of reminded you of your natural born gifts?
I don't know if it's daily habits. I do know that as of like late, I've been working on a lot of self-care. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that I do feel like the two tie together, because I, you know, again, from conversations with my husband, understanding how important it is to take care of yourself first. And really taking care of your body, right? Like, your body's a temple. This is what Jesus gave you. If you can't take care of that and he can't trust you with that, how can he give you more to work on when you're not even like taking care of the first things first, right? So spending a lot of time now just really listening to my body and doing what feels right and doing what I need to do for myself versus saying yes to everybody and doing everything for everyone else, right? So when we first started talking, you asked me how I was feeling and what I plan on doing with my day. And I said, I feel tired. Mm-hmm. And I read something that said, it's okay to feel tired. Don't fight it. Lay down, take a nap. Mm-hmm. You'll wake up, you'll feel refreshed. And it's an interesting concept, because for so long I feel guilty about taking naps, right? Or like doing things that just, like, sometimes I sit here and I decide I'm going to be creative for an hour and I'll color, or I'll, you know, create something on the computer, whatever. I'll do some marketing, but it's something fun to me. And it's so important to do that, right? To take care of yourself. And I feel like it's a test. Like, I feel like God wants you to take care of yourself so he can take care of you. Mm-hmm. But if the two go together, you know, so lately I've been really focusing on a lot of self-care. I also spend a lot of time reflecting now. So when you get caught up in the business, it's so easy to forget, like literally forget where you came from, but like what you just did, mm-hmm. or like some big thing that just happened. And I am like such a big culprit of it. Like, you know, I get so caught up with like, why have I not grown here? And I, like my husband or my mom or my friends will be like, but don't you remember just last year we were helping you slave in the kitchen making jam and now someone's doing it for you? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yeah, that's right. I hated doing that. Yeah, this is good, you know? And so I spend more time reflecting now. Sometimes I just sit down and I like will pick a date on the calendar or pull something up, right? And it'll say some event I did and I'll be like, oh yeah, remember when you did that event and you only sold, you know, 30 jams, or you sold 30 jams and you're so excited about it, but like now your number is like 60 or something, mm-hmm. and that's what excites you. But do you remember when you were excited about 30? Like, look how you've doubled that now, or, you know, things like that. So
right.
really spending time reflecting on that. And then I've been very fortunate. I have a lot of supporters and a lot of them are strangers. And it's kind of put me into this space where I feel like part of my purpose may be to help others in ways that I don't even mean to. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of people that, especially since the show came out, The Hustle, but even before that and since then, so many people will reach out to me and just say, you know, thank you for your transparency. Thank you for what you said on the show. You really encouraged me to start my own business. Or, you know, you and your husband encouraged me to like strengthen my marriage and put us first. Or like literally I get 10 of these messages a day, every day. And yeah. So I started screenshotting these and putting them in folders. And I really want to print a lot of this stuff out because I have stuff on paper that people have sent me. I mean, I have handwritten notes that my husband has written me and just left on the table that's just said like, you know, with me and you and God, with us in your corner, you can do anything, like things like that. Mm-hmm. I've kept all these things and I really want to print them all out and just like start a wall of things to be proud of and frame them, mm-hmm. because these are the things that help you really stay grounded and push forward. And so reading these things are kind of a daily ritual. I'll go back and read some of these messages, or when I get overwhelmed, I'm like, oh, I have all these DMs, I don't feel like answering them, I'll take the time to sit down and look at them, because I always feel better after. They're always so encouraging. And that also goes back to what you're saying about me being transparent. I think I learned a little while ago that I started being transparent because someone told me, you know, hey, I love your brand, but we want to see more of you. And I said, I thought, why? Like, why? It's about jam though. And they said, because we love to see the person behind the jam. We want to see who started this. It's going to inspire people. So I started doing these stories and started being transparent about everything. Mm-hmm. And the reaction has been crazy. Mm-hmm. So I thought, man, just for me being transparent about anxiety, about my relationship, about the ups and downs, the roller coaster of entrepreneurship, people are getting inspired. And it's just important for me because I think some of the things I've been through, it would have been nice to know someone was being more transparent with me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like when it was time to quit my job, I kept asking other entrepreneurs, like, how are you doing this though? And they would say, man, like sis, you just gotta like grind, you gotta hustle. No, that doesn't help me. How are you doing this?
Yeah.
Financially, I'm going to grind and hustle, but I need to know how you are paying the bills. And nobody wanted to share it with me. And so it's important for me to share with people and say, I don't pay myself. I don't make any money. We're living off of the savings that we have had over the years, you know, and also our faith, because every time where I get to a point where I'm like, all right, in like a month, I'm going to have no money. So God, let me know. And then literally Don will come home and say, I got a bonus today at work and I didn't even expect it. And it'll be like, what?
Wow.
Oh, okay. Like, yes, God, come through like you always do. You know what I mean? So, but I needed someone to be more transparent with me on some of these things. And still to this day, you know, I encourage like other people I know, I'm like, no, tell me. tell me what the next step, what did you go through? And I encourage them to like be open and honest about it because it's helpful. And then I can be open and honest with people as well. So all of those are things that I kind of do for myself too. It helps to be transparent. It's like therapy.
Right. Yeah, I love that. And I feel like the whole collecting the DMs and the notes, like that is the epitome of like what I thought about when I said, okay, I want to create this remedy of reminders that, like you said, you can reflect. And just when you are like starting to count yourself out, you're like, you know what, actually, let me go remind myself of these 10 times that like things were, you know, small wins or God came through or whatever, and kind of, you know, get my mind back where it needs to be. Well, I am just thrilled with this conversation. I have taken so much away from it. I know that my listeners are going to be all ears and definitely taking a ton of notes. Where can they stay in touch with you, or how can they stay in touch with you?
Yeah, so you guys can follow us on Instagram at Trade Street Jam Co. It's Trade ST Jam Co. That's the best way. If you have questions, like shoot me a DM. At my email address, you can find it on the page. I answer every single person that writes me. So if you guys, you know, need advice or just want to talk or about anything, hit me up.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Ashley.
Thank you for having me. I hope to talk to you soon.
Special thanks again to Ashley for hopping on the show. I was so inspired by her journey, and I know many of you are as well. You know, we're at that time of the year where we're approaching second quarter, officially, I guess, now that March 31st has passed. Many of us are really using the spring energy and the warmer temperatures to represent that reflection that Ashley talked about that played such a significant role in her business and in her personal growth. You know, this is a season that represents a transformational change in many lives. And most of us want to make a decision on what we're going to do to kind of rebirth ourselves. Maybe we're looking at some of the goals that we set at the top of the year and seeing and reflecting on how far we've gotten on them. Or many of us are taking a step back to see how do we want to, you know, put some more effort in some things that maybe we didn't get done. So I want to introduce you guys to a brand new tool that I'll be rolling out in a few short days. I think that many of you all have seen me talk about it on the Reminder Remedy Instagram page, but I could not be more thrilled to finally get this to you all. I had a lucky group of 10 have the opportunity to check out this new tool. And to be completely honest, the feedback has been so overwhelming. Many emails come back with emojis that have tears running from their faces because so many people are having that rebirth that we talked about in this episode. And so in a few short days, I am going to be officially rolling out the Getting Unstuck Guide. Now, this is a free tool that really is just going to be a ultimate game changer for so many of my listeners. I think to date, one of my most popular episodes is still that Getting Unstuck episode, The Art and Science of Thinking. And so I took a lot of those scientific concepts and started practicing them in my everyday life. And over the last couple of years, I've really created some tools that not only help me get unstuck, but allow me to bounce back when I do get stuck. Because what you'll find a lot of times is that, you know, it's part of life. It's part of seasons. It's inevitable, but it's about how you get unstuck and the methodology that you know and can equip yourself with to make sure you do that in a way that's most effective as you go out and live your authentic lives. So I want you guys to get excited about that. Stay tuned. It's going to get first released on my website. So if you have not subscribed to alenacounley.com, you're going to want to go over to that landing page right now and put in your email address so that you can be the first to know about this tool. All right. Thanks again to Ashley. I look forward to hearing from you guys. Next week will be my first solo episode in several months, and I'm going to be just catching you guys up on Alina, Alina mom of three, Alina the wife, Alina the business owner. So many changes, but also so many gems that I think you guys are going to appreciate. So see you next week.